سورة الفاتحة. حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل، نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله. والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا القاسم محمد. فقد قال الله الحكيم في كتابه المتين، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم: ألم أعهد إليكم يا بني آدم أن لا تعبدوا الشيطان إنه لكم عدو مبين وأن اعبدوني هذا صراط مستقيم. صلوات محمد saying in Surah Yasin, speaking to all of mankind, whether they are Muslim or non-Muslim, he's speaking to all the children of Adam and reminding them that did we not take an oath from you, O children of Adam? Did we not take an oath from you? You gave me a promise, you made a promise with me that you shall not worship shaitan. You made that promise, remember? All of us, we made that promise. That you shall not worship shaitan, he is your open enemy. Even though you can't see him, you don't know where he's coming from, but Allah is saying, he is your open enemy, clear and obvious enemy. Allah, but you don't even see him. Even though you don't see him, he is your open enemy. Adubun Mubin. He is your open and obvious enemy. So something that is unseen, something that you cannot even see, Allah is saying, can be your open and obvious and clear enemy. He can still be your clear enemy even though you don't see him. So if you understood the concept of adubun mubin, meaning your open enemy, even though he cannot be seen, he is your open enemy, then you can understand the concept of imam mubin, who cannot be seen but he's still your open and clear imam. Right? And hence Allah is saying he's your open enemy. You cannot see him, but he is very open, very clear, very manifest. So your job is not to obey him and to obey Allah. وَأَنَا بُدُونِي, that you shall worship me. It is Allah that you have to worship. هَذَا صِرَاطٌ مُسْتَقِيمٌ. This is صِرَاطٌ مُسْتَقِيمٌ. Meaning there are two things: not worshipping shaitan and worshipping Allah, not obeying shaitan and obeying Allah. What we are discussing in this month of Ramadan is the first part of the equation, how not to worship shaitan. So in order to not worship shaitan, we need to know who shaitan is. We need to understand who shaitan is. What is shaitan? And here, just one point I'll make before I go on with what I was saying yesterday. Just this one thing, that when we make this dua of Ihdina Siratul Mustaqim, right? We are Muslims, we pray, so we say Ihdina Siratul Mustaqim at least 10 times a day. So every day we are saying Ihdina Siratul Mustaqim, right? Now, obviously we are saying this because we are Muslim. we have entered the fold of Islam, and still we say, "Ihdina as-sirata al-mustaqim." Allah, show me the right path. Guide us to the right path. Right? Now the issue is this. Just want to clear a misconception that people have. In understanding what is sirata al-mustaqim. You see, you're saying "Ihdina as-sirata al-mustaqim" after you became Muslim, meaning after you entered the fold of Islam. So if you are a Muslim, if you have entered Islam, if the concept that we have and that you hear from people, what is Sirat al-Mustaqim? They say Islam is Sirat al-Mustaqim. Well, I became Muslim, so why is Allah asking me to say Ihdina Sirat al-Mustaqim after I became Muslim? If Islam was Sirat al-Mustaqim, then why am I still saying Ihdina Sirat al-Mustaqim? If I entered the fold of Islam, if I said La ilaha illallah Muhammadan Rasulullah, and I entered the fold of Islam, after I entered it, then Allah is saying, now say Ihdina Sirat al-Mustaqim. I mean, He's not asking non-Muslims to say it, He's asking Muslims to say it. So when we entered Islam, now we're saying Ihdina Sirat al-Mustaqim. Well, Allah, here's the deal. If Islam is Sirat al-Mustaqim, then why are we asking you dua every day, asking us to guide us to the right path? Why? Why are we asking for guidance even after we accept Islam? You see, that means Islam is not Sirat al-Mustaqim. Now let me take it one step further, right, to clarify another conception that Shias might have. They say, oh no, you know, you have to be a mu'min. Okay? If you are a mu'min, a believer, and you say Aliyun Waliyullah also, are you going to stop praying? You know, there are those Shia who say that, hey, listen, after we accepted Ali, no need for prayer. You know? So are you going to stop praying? In fact, the sign of a Shia is that he prays. You know, when, for example, some people came behind Imam Ali after he made his Isha prayer. He was walking into a graveyard. They came behind him. It was dark. He turned around and looked at them. They say, he asked them, "Man antum? Who are you?" He says, "Nahnu Shiatuk. We are your Shia. We are your Shia." He looked at them from head to toe. He said, "No, you're not." He said, "No, you're not. But we are a Shia. We claim to be a Shia, so we must be a Shia." You know? He says, "No, you're not. You're not my Shia." He says, "Then what is, you know?" They're confused. He said, "You don't have the signs of a Shia in you. You don't have the signs of a believer in you." He says, "What are the signs of believers?" I'm not going to mention those signs, I'm just mentioning it on the side, right? One of those signs he mentioned is that they have marks on their forehead from excessive prostration to Allah. Because they are so excessive in their prostration to Allah, they have marks on their forehead. One of those signs Imam Ali mentioned. So, if you are a Shia, if you are a mu'min, it means that you pray more. And if you pray more, then, you know, you're saying Ihdina as-sirata al-mustaqim more often now. So even after you entered the fold of Iman and you became a mu'min, still you're saying, "Allah, guide me to the right path. Allah, show me the right path." So what is the Sirat al-Mustaqim? If it's not Islam, if it's not Iman, then what is Sirat al-Mustaqim? You see, the misconception was that Islam, by saying two sentences, you're on Sirat al-Mustaqim. The misconception is that by saying three sentences and becoming a mu'min, you think you're on Sirat al-Mustaqim. Neither is Islam Sirat al-Mustaqim, neither is Iman Sirat al-Mustaqim. Allah is defining what Sirat al-Mustaqim is. It means to disobey shaitan and to obey Allah. And every day of your life, every moment of your life, you have to keep on fighting shaitan and you have to keep on obeying Allah. This every moment of your life struggle, this is Sirat al-Mustaqim that you're asking Allah. Allah, show me Sirat al-Mustaqim and the right path every moment of my life.
MashaAllah.
Mustaqim, because every day you have to fight him. Every day you have to get rid of him. Every day you have to reject him. That's why Allah is saying, every day say, Ahdina Siratul Mustaqim, my friend. That's what Siratul Mustaqim is. And this is why we are learning about Shaitan, so that we know who Shaitan is really well. So you understand where he comes from. And I mentioned one quality of Shaitan yesterday from the Quran. Right? One of those qualities of Shaitan, where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gives the example of Shaitan and says, كَمَثَلِ الشَّيْطَانِ. Like the example of Shaitan. He says, what? إِذْ قَالَ لِلْإِنسَانِ. When he comes to mankind, when he comes to people and says, أُكْفُرْ. Disbelieve in Allah. Disbelieve in Allah. فَلَمَّا كَفَرَ. And when people disbelieve in Allah, when they disobey Allah, قَالَ إِنِّي بَرِيٌّ مِنْكَ. Then he says, hey, I have nothing to do with you. I didn't make you do it. You're on your own. You're on your own. إِنِّي أَخَافُ اللَّهَ رَبَّ الْعَالَمِينَ. Hey, I am afraid of Allah. So Shaitan says, he tells you, I am afraid of Allah, you are not. Because you disobeyed Allah, I'm not a fool to do that. Right? I'm not a fool to do that. No, you disobeyed Allah. So in other words, Shaitan is someone who makes promises to you. Because he's asking you to do something, so he promises something in return, and he breaks those promises. Understand one thing, my friends, Shaitan never keeps his promises. Whatever he promises you, whatever, whether it's money, whether it's, for example, wealth, whether it's land, whether it's government, whether it's green card, whether it's anything else that you want, no matter what he promises you, it will never come to you. You will never get it. You will never have it because it's not in his hands. He is not the one who gives it. He doesn't have anything to give it to you. He doesn't have anything. Whatever he promises is a lie. He cannot. Allah, see, everything belongs to Allah. Allah is the one who gives you. It's we who don't understand that it's not Allah who's giving. You see, we adore and we worship our boss and our jobs because we think that we are getting rizq from them. This is our lack of ideology, that we think that the means is the goal, that the means of receiving the rizq is Allah. And we adore our jobs and we obey our bosses like they are the ones who are giving the rizq. The fact is that it's Allah who gives it, not your boss, not your job, no one else. The rizq is given to you by Allah. So Shaitan, whenever he makes a promise, he'll break it. But from our side, what is our reaction? I want us to understand this today. My friends, when it comes to this issue, there are two types of people, and I'm going to give you two examples. Two examples from history, who are completely opposite of each other. And their example has been recorded in history. And both their fate, both their destinies were decided in one night. Both these people, right? The decision they made was similar. Their fate was decided on one night. But you see how different they were. And I want you to understand the psychology of these two people and understand where do we fall in this issue. Send me a salawat. When we look at it, you will see the first example I'm giving you, my friends, is the example of Umar ibn Sa'd. Yeah. Umar ibn Sa'd ibn Waqqas. Salawat alaykum.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Umar ibn Sa'd, he was the person who was in charge of the army of Yazid. He was the one who shot the first arrow towards Imam Husayn. He was the one who declared that everyone be a witness that I am the one who started this war. And he shot the arrows. He was the one who was ultimately responsible for killing Imam Hussein and his children and his family and friends. Umar ibn Sa'd. Why? Now, his destiny was decided on a particular night. This Umar ibn Sa'd was approached by Ibn Ziyad, who came to Umar ibn Sa'd and said, "Hey, listen, I have a job offer for you. I have a job offer for you." Umar ibn Sa'd said, "What is it?" He said, "Listen, first, you want to hear about the job or the price?" He says, "All right, tell me what the job is." He says, "The job is that you'll have to kill Hussein. That's your job." Umar ibn Sa'd was like, "Okay, what's the price? What's the payment?" He says, "You will get the city of Rey." Rey is a town in Iran. In those days, it was a big city. It was a huge city. A lot of revenue, a lot of money that came in. And he said, "You will be the governor of Rey." Wow. So on one hand, he saw the governorship of Rey. It's like, you know, you are the mayor of New York City. I mean, imagine how many under the table deals you can earn with. You know, make deals with the mafia, you'll be like set, not just for a lifetime, but 9 lifetimes ahead of you. 9 generations will be living off what you can earn. Right? Imagine that. So here you are, and he's thinking, okay, wow, that's good offer, you know, good price. But then he looked at this side, he said, "I have to kill Hussein." Wow, that's also a big job there, you know. So he said, "All right, you know what, I can't decide right now. Give me one night to decide. Give me one night to decide and I'll decide this." So he went back to his house, and all night long he was thinking, "Should I do it, should I not? Should I do it, should I not?" All night long he was deciding. And really, just to put his decision in perspective of what he was doing, let me give you an example so you understand the decision he's making. Salawat alayhi wa sallam. With a certain degree. And you know, it's so hard to find jobs in your own field. You know, like for example, nowadays, because of the economy, because of the economy, the situation is such that you get a job in the IT field and you're working in finances. Right? You get a job in, you know, for example, accounting, and you're working as a receptionist, you know. It's so hard to get a job in the field that you studied in. So let's say, you know, that you did a very specialized field and you have a job offer. You went there to the job. And you know what? The job is offered, the interviewer is asking you the questions, you answer, and it's all good. And he lays down your offer. He says, "Hey, listen, this will be the salary. It is excellent. I mean, it's more than you can imagine. Wow." You're like, wow. He says, "Here are the holidays. Are you generous? Lenient, you know? Wow. You can make your own, you know, like, holidays for yourself and this and that. Great. And the perks and bonuses. And all that. You know, they even add you a vacation of golf, you know? Wow. I can learn golf now, you know?" So, you're like, this is amazing. The job is amazing. You get your own office by the window. You can look down and see the people walking on the streets and the river flowing by and the St. Louis Arch, you know. Wow. This is the ideal job for me. I cannot even ask for something. I couldn't even make this up. Something that's better than this. He says, okay, you know, The offer is great. So now what? There's only one catch. Okay, what's the catch? You're always wondering, okay, what's the catch? The catch is here to stay, right? The only problem is that you have to work at your work. You cannot leave your work. You have to work from 12 o'clock till 8 o'clock at night without any break. No lunch, no break. That's it. You will be there. You cannot leave your desk. Okay? Now, say, the best job you can be offered. Everything is there. On the other hand, you have to work from 12 to 8 directly. No stoppage. Now, friends, tell me. If you work from 12 to 8, what are you sacrificing? You're sacrificing your Dohra Nasr. Right? You're sacrificing your Dohra Nasr. You accept the job, you can't pray Dohra Nasr. If you sacrifice Dohra Nasr, you get the job. Right? Now, you have to make a decision. Do I sacrifice the job and keep my prayers, or do I sacrifice prayers and keep my job? You know, and here obviously Shaitan is your advisor. Lay Allah darhamur rahimin, don't worry. Allah darhamur rahimin, he'll take care of you, don't worry, you know. Come on, you know. You can find time to pray again. You can't find a job like this. You know? So now you're making a decision. He says, do I take prayer or do I take job? Do I get the job and sacrifice my prayer, or do I get my prayers and sacrifice my job? Again, what is this? Prayer is akhirat, is deen. Job is dunya. So the issue is, the whole issue, the basic issue is, do I take dunya and sacrifice deen, or do I take deen and sacrifice dunya? If you see the predicament you are in, now you can understand the predicament that Umar ibn Sa'd is in. Do I kill Hussein and get the city of Ray? Or do I take, you know, I sacrifice the city of Ray and leave Hussein and not be responsible? You see, obviously, you know, I mean, the prize for killing Hussein is not, for example, you know, 100,000 a year job. I mean, that's a city of Ray. That's the once in a lifetime chance to get money for the rest of your generations to come. It's not an easy prize. It's like you win it, like a lottery ticket for $200 million. You know, a lot of times you see that, you know, and people, you know, I mean, you see it, right? You know, I mean, I had this experience, you know, I was in the gas station, this guy in front of me, right? He's asking for the lottery ticket, right? He's asking, you know, the guy looks like some kind of a laborer, you know, like some laborer job or something, you know, so he's asking, you know, so how much is the lottery this week, you know, how much is the price for the lottery? He says, 6 million. Ah, 6 million, that's nothing. You don't even have $6 in your pocket. What are you waiting for? 16 million? Come on, what's wrong with you? I mean, the issue is this, right? It's the mentality of people, you know? If the price is more, they tend to play because they think that there's a higher price. So obviously, you know, to Umar ibn Sa'd, it was a city of Ray. It wasn't a small offer. It was a very big offer. And on the other side, all he has to do is kill Hussein. And obviously, you know, Shaitan is always advising me at this time. He's saying, listen, man, if you don't do it, someone else will. Yeah, someone else will do it anyway. So why should I lose the price? Right? The issue is this, my friends. Now he made the decision. And I want you all to understand his decision. And I'm not saying it. He himself has written it down in his diary. He has written down his decision in all night long. He was thinking. He was engrossed in thinking. He couldn't sleep the whole night. And I want you to understand why it's hard for him. You see, why is it hard for him to make this decision? Let me just give you a background of Umar ibn Sa'd, alright? So you understand this better. Send me salawats.
Allahumma
This woman ibn Sa'd, his father's name is Sa'd ibn Waqqas. Sa'd ibn Waqqas is one of those 10 people who are supposedly promised heaven. Right? They're called Ashara Mubashara. Right? The 10 people who have been promised heaven, Sa'd ibn Waqqas is one of them. Right? And this Sa'd ibn Waqqas, now let me tell you something about him also so you know what kind of a heavenly person he is. Right? So, when Imam Ali alayhi salam was on his deathbed and he was dying, you know, because after he was struck for 3 days he was alive, in those 3 days he had made announcements to the people saying, Suluni, Suluni, Qabla an tafquduni. You know, ask me any question you want to before you lose me. I'm here right now, I can answer you, ask me anything. I'm here to help you, I'm here to advise you, I'm here to answer your questions. So, this person, Sa'd ibn Waqqas, the intelligent man that he is, went to him and asked him a question, you know. And obviously it is as intelligent as they could in those days, right? So he asked him, how many hair do I have on my head? You know? Now, my friends, obviously, you know, I mean, even as a student right now, you know, like you ask such questions, you know, you will get stupid answers too, you know, because the answer is according to the intellectual level or the stupidity level of the question, right? That is the answer. So, you know, obviously if Humphrey said, hey, listen, like, even if I tell you how many hair you have on your head, how will you verify the answer? I mean, how will you verify the answer? You know, there was a Mughal king in India, you know, by the name of Akbar. He had these 9 gems in his court, you know, these 9 great, extremely talented people. One of them, his name was Birbal. Right? His name was Birbal, right? What is his name was Birbal. So the king was looking at the birds, and he asked some of his other advisors, you know, how many birds do I have in my city, you know? So they wanted, because they were envious of Birbal, so they wanted to get him into trouble, right? And they wanted him to say, I don't know. Because he always had an answer for something. So they asked Birbal, hey, how many birds are there in this city? So he said, you know, some random number, 1,984,556. Looking at each other. He says, what if they're less? He said, they went somewhere else to visit. What if they're more? They're guests who came over here. You ask me a stupid question, you get a stupid answer. You know, what happened? How would you verify it? If I tell you how many hair you have in your head, how would you verify that? How would you know that? You see, understand it. And so, here you have this person asking, how many hair I have on my head? He says, you know, even if I tell you, you won't know, right? But I will tell you this much, that I heard from Rasulullah. He said, I heard from Rasulullah that on every hair that is on your head, there is an angel that is hanging on that hair. There is an angel that is hanging on your hair that is sending lanat on you. That is sending lanat on you, that is cursing you. I heard Rasulullah say this about you. Now the guy is like, what's he going to say? Right? And then Imam Ali added something else. He said, but I will let you know one thing. Right? I will let you know one fact. Since you are here and you asked me this question, I will let you know one fact. And he said that your son is going to kill my son Hussein. Sa'd ibn Waqqas was not the only person there. There are many other people there. They all heard that. They all heard Imam Hussein, they heard Imam Ali say that he's going to kill Hussein. So when he heard that, when everyone heard that, now everyone, whenever they used to see Umar ibn Sa'd, who was a grown-up man, whenever they used to see Umar ibn Sa'd, they used to say, "Hada qatil al-Hussein." This is the killer of Hussein. This is the killer of Hussein. So he heard them and he got upset. He said, "What are these people talking about?" So Umar ibn Sa'd came to Imam Hussein. He came to Imam Hussein and says, "Mawla, did you hear what these people are saying?" "What are they saying?" "He's saying, they're saying that I'm going to kill you. These people are stupid. They're saying that I'm going to kill you." Imam Hussein replied to him and says, "Listen, whether you're going to kill me or not, only time will tell, but these people are not stupid. The people are not stupid. Whether you're going to kill me or not, only time will tell." And Umar ibn Sa'd was like, "But I cannot kill you. I'm not a hypocrite. I love you. I love you. You are my Mawla. I love you. How can I kill you? Who is this Umar ibn Sa'd? That Umar ibn Sa'd who's claiming to love Imam Hussein. That same Umar ibn Sa'd, when dunya came in front of his eyes, and the prize was good enough, then that deen that he had now changed. And he ended up killing Imam Hussein." I mean, this is Umar ibn Sa'd. To him, when he was making the decision, it wasn't easy because he knew who Imam Hussein is. He had claimed love to Imam Hussein. He was a lover of Imam Hussein. It wasn't easy for him to make that decision. That's why he was looking at the price. He was looking at Hussein. And after the whole night of thinking, he came to a conclusion. He came to a conclusion which he wrote down in his diary. My friends, I want you to understand this conclusion of his. This is one side of the coin I'm giving you, Umar ibn Sa'd. What was his conclusion? He said in the morning that after a whole night of thinking, I came to a great conclusion. He himself is praising his conclusion. I came to a great conclusion, and that is that the cash of this dunya, the cash that's in this dunya is better than the credit of the hereafter. Umar ibn Sa'd is saying, his conclusion was that cash is better than credit. Dunya is giving me cash, it's right here. Yazid is here, his power is here. Allah has made me promises. Promise of heaven, promise of Hurun'een, promise of gardens, promise of rivers. These are all promises. Have I seen it? No. Did you see it? No. It's just promises. Dunya is here. That is just a promise. So he made a conclusion that cash is better than credit. Cash is better than credit. This is what he made. That is the decision. My friends, understand it. This is the decision of Umar ibn Sa'd. And based on this decision, he decided to kill Imam Hussein because he said there is no way to know if that promise is going to be true or not. The promise of heaven is going to be true or not. Dunya is here. Money is here. I can grab it. It's tangible. That is abstract. I don't even know what's going to happen. Understand this decision. This is Umar ibn Sa'd's decision. This is one side. Now let me give you another example of someone else who made a similar decision. And that night, and his fate was also decided in one night. And that person was Hur ibn Yazid al-Riyadi. Hur made a decision, a similar decision. And that decision that he made was on the night of Ashura. On the night of Ashura, Hur is deciding, he's anxious, he's waiting, and he's looking around, and he's thinking. Now who's this Hur? Hur is the commander of one of Yazid's army. He has 1,000 soldiers who are under him. He is a rich man, a wealthy man, a respected man, a famous man. He has everything you can ask for in this dunya. He has money, he has fame, he has everything. Respect, honor, whatever you want. He has it. If you take the name of whore, you'll be like, wow, that's whore. You know, he was known as brave, he was known as courageous, he was famous, he was strong, he was wealthy. I mean, what else do you want? You have everything. You have dunya. But then he was deciding on the night of Ashura, I have dunya. But what you expect from dunya, I don't have. With all this dunya that I have, why am I not happy? Why am I not happy? With all this wealth and all this fame and everything I have, why am I not happy? Why am I in fear? You know? That's when he decided that, listen, wait a minute. If I stay here, I will be responsible for Hussein's debts. Even if I don't do anything. But I haven't helped him. And if I go there, I will lose my dunya. But at least I don't have Hussein. At least I don't have Hussein on my side. Khur is making a decision. And you see, that decision that he's making is also between deen and dunya. He already has dunya. There's no need to promise him anything. He already has everything more than you can promise. And then he's looking on the other side of the battlefield. A few tents are there, a few people are there. And he's saying, I have dunya, but deen is over there. Deen is on the other side of the battlefield. And if I go there, I lose this dunya. If I stay here, I lose that deen. My friends, Khur is making a decision. And someone, he comes to him on the night of Ashura, he says, Khur, you look anxious, why are you afraid? He says, I'm not afraid. He says, don't be afraid, you don't have to fight, we will do the fighting for you. He says, you know, I'm not afraid, I'm just making a decision. What are you deciding about? He says, I'm deciding whether I should stay here. If I stay here, I have the dunya that I wanted and it's here. But I will never have the Jannat and the heaven whose master is Hussein. And I'm making a decision between that heaven and that paradise that lies with Hussein and that dunya that I have under my feet. He says, well, what did you decide on? He says, I decided on deen and akhirah. He says, well, why don't you go then? He says, not now, I will leave. But I will leave in the morning, not at night. No one can say that, or, you know, he escaped at night. So he waited till morning. My friends, understand this now. He waited till morning. He went to the tent of Umar ibn Sa'd. And he asked Umar ibn Sa'd, Ibn Sa'd, are you sure you're going to fight Hussein? Umar ibn Sa'd said, yes, there's no way, but it's going to happen. It's going to happen for sure. Then Khur said, I'm leaving. My friend, understand this. Who is this Umar ibn Sa'd? You heard the decision that he made, Umar ibn Sa'd made. That cash is better than credit. Khur is giving now his decision. He's saying, I'm leaving. Umar ibn Sa'd, why? Why are you leaving for? Now Khur explains his decision. He says, I've decided that Allah's promise is better than what this dunya can offer me. Understand this. Allah's promise is better than what this dunya can offer me. In other words, he's saying the credit that Allah is promising is better than the cash this dunya can give me. On one side, Umar ibn Sa'd said, cash is better than credit. On the other side, Khur is saying, no, credit is better than cash. Allah kept both these examples recorded in history for every generation to come after this, so that they can decide who are they like. Are they Umar ibn Sa'd or are they Khur? If they're Khur, then they will choose Allah's promise and leave what dunya has to offer them. Salawat ala Muhammad. Now you see Allah has promised me. Jannat. This dunya, those who have it know it. It's just that, my friends, when you don't have it, that's when shaitan says, oh, if you only had it. You know, if you're not a millionaire, he says, oh, if you were only a millionaire, you would know what a yacht feels like. You know, you would know what a, you know, $10 million house feels like. Marble floors, marble bathrooms. My friends, you know, even with marble bathrooms, right, they still have to take laxatives. Okay. Right? In fact, it's better for people who don't have those. They have a much better time sleeping and going to bathrooms than those people who have everything. Understand this, my friend. This is the way Shaitan described. If you don't have it, says only if you only had it, then you would know what the pleasure is. No, there is no pleasure. If there was pleasure, then those who had it would have claimed it. Those who have it, they are in problems. Their lives are messed up. Their lives are ruined. Well, if they had it, it means that if everyone who had it would be happy. But my friends, here's the thing. Those who have deen, those who have Allah's, those who have kept and fulfilled and put their trust in Allah's promise, if you look at them, you will find without any exception that the one thing they will have is always happiness. Without exception, you will see anyone who has given up dunya for akhirah, you will never see him fret and complain. You will always see him happy and say, Alhamdulillah, I'm happy. This is why you see Allah gives the example that when we gave the example of dunya and sacrificing dunya for deen, Allah gives the example of the imam, and he says, look at that imam who gave up his whole dunya and everything he had. He gave everything up. For what? So that Allah can be pleased. When he went back to Allah, Allah called him by saying, Ya ayyatuha nafsul mutma'inna. O nafse mutma'in, O soul that is in complete rest and happiness, come towards me. Happiness is by sacrificing dunya for deen. That is where true happiness comes. When dunya is our goal, my friends, there is no happiness. There will always be that anxiety, that anger, that unhappiness. When we looked at those who sacrifice dunya for deen, then you see that they're happy. That's why life, living, my friends, as a Muslim is good, but dying as a Muslim is better. Dying as a Muslim is better. Living as a Muslim, yes, but Allah doesn't give importance to that. Allah says, فَلَا تَمُوتُنَّ إِلَّا وَأَنْتُمْ مُسْلِمُونَ. Do not die until you're a Muslim. If you live to be a Muslim all your life, but if you die as a kafir, then Islam has no value. But if you live your life as a kafir all your life, but you die as a Muslim, that has value. That's why, my friends, to us, if we are Muslims today, then our job is to maintain it until we die. Because until then, we are at odds with shaitan. Shaitan is pulling us away, we have to stay on it. Until we die. And when you die as a Muslim, then you should smile and say, Alhamdulillah, I am dying now and I am Muslim. I have submitted to Allah. I'm still on submission. You see the difference. If you understood this emotion, if you understood this ideology, then understand why your imam, when he was struck on the head, he was saying, Fustu bi Rabbillah. Why was he saying, Fustu bi Rabbillah, I am successful by Allah, I am successful today. Ali, you tore down the door of Khaybar, but you never said you were successful. Ali, you broke the head of Amr successful. Ali, you won all these victories for Islam and you never said you were successful. Now that you are struck on the head and know that you are going to die, you're saying, I am successful. You see, this is that ideology, knowing that what is success? Friends, success is going before Allah with a clean heart. Going before Allah with submission to Allah's rules, to His laws, to His Sharia. Bowing down before it. Then when you go before Allah, then you will be like, Allah, I have nothing to fear now. And those who haven't, you will see that they die, they are in fear. They're fearful. Why? Because they haven't. They are not ready to go before Allah. They're not ready to face Allah. Ali was ready to face Allah. That's why he said, Fustu bi Rabbil Kaaba, I am successful today. Alright. And if you look at the other khulafa, what were they saying? Second Khalifa, when he was dying, his son, Abdullah, he took his head and put it on the lap. So he got angry at his son and he called him illegitimate. Put his head on the ground and said, Mother, help me, Mother. And he died in that situation. Right? Crying and calling for his mother. Mother, help me, Mother. And when you see Imam Ali, he's saying, Fustu bi Rabbil Kaaba, I am successful by the Lord of the Kaaba, I am successful today. Now I'm going before my beloved. Now I can be with my beloved. Friends, understand this. This is Imam Ali. This is what he's showing us. Who is he? So that we understand. Today, we are becoming orphans. It is not only Zainab and Umm Kulsum who are becoming orphans. We are becoming orphans. If our father had died long time ago, still we haven't felt his emptiness. We haven't felt his loss. Because the Imam is on our head. But that now that when the Imam is going, when the Imam is leaving us, truly we feel the vacuum and the loss of a father. Imam is the father of the Ummah. He is the father of the Ummah. Today we feel his loss. Friends, this night, the night of the 19th of Ramadan, Imam Ali came to the house of his daughter, Umm Kulsum. He came to her house as a guest. Imam Ali would go to the house of his sons to be with them. He would spend his time there. And this night he came to Umm Kulsum's house. And Umm Kulsum was the host, Imam Ali was the guest. A father like Ali is coming as a guest. Imagine what would you make for him? What would you make for him? What would you offer him? And when Umm Kulsum brought the iftar for Imam Ali, there was dates, there was a bread, and there was a glass of milk. When you look at that and you see that a father like Ali is coming for dinner and for iftar, that's all we're giving him? Is that the way a host should be to the Imam? If we were there and if Imam Ali came to our house, imagine what we would offer him, what we would make for him. But Umm Kulsum would tell us that you don't know my father like I do. You don't know my father like I do. I just gave him three things. But even when Imam Ali looked at those three things, he looked at his daughter and said, my daughter, have you ever seen your father eat people look up to you, then you are always worrying about the poorest of your people. If they don't even have this date to eat, how can I eat this date and be happy that my subjects do not have that to eat? Imam Ali is worrying about all his people and he's saying, no, I will not take these blessings of Allah. They are for those who do not have these blessings. This is Imam Ali. This is the character of Imam Ali. And then Umm Kulthum, when she feeds him, Imam Ali says, that this was his habit. His habit was that when he would be done, then he would go and pray for one third of the night. One third of the night he would be in prayer. And then after that, he would go to sleep for one third of the night. And then he would get up and he would go to the masjid. And now you see Imam Ali. Imam Ali in that situation, after he prayed on that night, he went to sleep. When he went to sleep, he was sleeping. And in that sleep, he saw a dream. He saw a dream, and then that dream was such that he woke up with a shriek. And he made a noise when he woke up. Umm Kulthum asked him, what is the matter, my father? Did you have a dream? He says, yes, I had a dream. Ra'aytu fi manami. I have seen in my dream. I have seen in my dream. Ibn Ammi Rasulullah. I have seen Rasulullah in my dream. He has come to me. And he came with Ibrahim. He came with Ismail. He came with all the Anbiya. And he held his hand towards me. And said, Ali, it is time for you to come now. Come towards me, Ali. It is time for you to come. And I woke up. Imam Ali was crying. He said, why are you crying? He said, don't you see how I want to be with Rasulullah? How I want to be with him? His sight has made me cry. That I long to be with him. And I yearn to be with him. So now Imam Ali, in the haze, he went outside. And when he went outside, there were ducks outside the house. There were ducks outside the house who started quacking. They started quacking so hard. And these ducks, when Imam Ali looked at them, he said, you never quacked before like this. You are seeing something that others do not see. And they were with him as he walked. Umm Kulthum got afraid. And she told Hassan, Hassan, go and see your father. I am worried for him. Go behind him. Imam Ali came to the masjid. Imam Ali came to the masjid. When he came to the masjid, he woke up the bee, he gave the azan. He woke up the people. As he woke up the people, now he came to Ibn Muljim. When he came to Ibn Muljim, he saw Ibn Muljim there. And Ibn Muljim looked at him. He said, wake up. And he saw Ibn Muljim is spread. He is sleeping on his stomach. And then he looked at Ibn Muljim and said, you should be sleeping on your stomach. And then after that, he said something that only Ibn Muljim understood. He said, I know what you're hiding underneath you. And I know what you're hiding underneath you. And I know what you're going to do with it. But Allah is a witness that I do not take. I do not do justice until the action is done. Imam Ali walked away from him. And as he went there, he started to make his nawafil for subh. And he said, Allahu Akbar. And everyone was getting behind him for the prayer so that they can come in lines. It wasn't Fajr. It was the nawafil of subh. Then Imam Ali said, Allahu Akbar. And he was in prayer. And when he said, Alhamdulillah. After that, he read the other surah. Then he went into ruku. And then as he got up, he went into sajda. He went into sajda. And it was at that time. It was at that time when Ibn Muljim came running around with his sword. And he came running around with his sword. And the sword of Ibn Muljim that was poison and came down on the head of Ali. Ali's head was coming out of sajda. Now my friends understand this. You see, when two cars, when two bodies are going on the same way, when they're going on the same way and they have a crash, you see the crash is not as hard because both of them are heading the same way. But you see, when two cars, when two bodies come on the opposite direction and they come and hit each other on the opposite direction, then you see the impact is greater. Understand that Ali's head was coming up and the sword was going down. When the
say, do not cry. I cannot take your tears because I see that scene and that image where I see you and I see you in that situation where you are covered with spears and arrows and you are being slaughtered. You are being slaughtered. Say, do not cry. I want to see you happy when I leave you. حضرت آرانِ حسین بس ایک آخری دو جملے کہہ دوں میں کہ ابو صاحب علی اپنے ضربت لگی ہے تو مولا اب وہ غشمِ حالت میں ہے اب وہ زہر آلودہ تلوار جو علی کے سر میں گھس چکی ہے اب وہ زہر کا اثر ہو چکا ہے چہرہ زرد ہو گیا ہے داڑھی خون سے بھر گئی ہے حسن اور حسین اطراف ہے اب علی کو
Well,